I'm going to start talking and hope sound comes out, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time. Hopefully we can get through this. This is going to be the squeakiest talk you've ever heard. Thank you, Dee, for inviting me to speak. I didn't mean to come this compromised, but hopefully we can get through this. I have kind of a unique job at South Dakota State. I am a reproductive disease specialist. This is kind of a field that was pioneered many years ago by Dr. Clyde Kirkbride. I don't know, some of you may know Clyde, or Clyde passed away a couple years ago, but he was basically my mentor and the founder of this whole field of study of abortion diagnostics and reproductive wastage. We've had the definitions multiple times: abortion, stillbirths, and weak borns. Obviously, the majority of my work is involved with later term reproductive losses. It basically has to be something that the producer can find and send to me. I've done this. I've processed all the abortion cases that are submitted to South Dakota State University for the past 20 years. We're unique in the fact that all these cases are processed by one person. I think that gives me an advantage in that one, the rest of the guys don't like to mess with this snot on the slide stuff. But it does give me an advantage to see trends over time. And what I've come to believe is that oftentimes these definitions are a continuum. Abortions to stillborns to weakborns are a continuum, and it's often based on placental function. We've had a lot on embryonic death, and so I'm not going to spend any real time there. Most of these are losses I don't deal with. These are the numerical things that have been addressed pretty thoroughly. I think what's important to realize is that if you look at maternal risk factors for abortion diseases, that pregnancy itself is a state of immunosuppression. The fetus is containing half of the genetic material from the bull. That's foreign genetic material. In order for that conceptus to survive, the dam's immune system has to be downregulated. So there's a whole host of cell-mediated functions that are downregulated just in order to maintain that pregnancy. In addition, suppressor T-cell activity is upregulated to keep that fetus intact. We've had discussions on nutritional deficiencies, stress, concurrent disease, feed quality. It goes into this discussion of a multifactorial process going on. Interestingly enough, in my line of work, you know, it's a relationship between producers, veterinarians, and the diagnostic lab. I'm kind of at the end. When I become involved is kind of almost determined by the producer and the veterinarian. How many is too many? You know, this has amazed me over the years. Some producers are really upset on calf one, or on abortion one. Others, not so much. You know, you may question them and say, well, we've had 10, 12% abortions and thought we might want to get one worked up. So there's a variability in that pain threshold. Getting accurate histories. That's been, I sometimes sound like a preacher when I'm talking to clients, because that's, you know, one of the things that I've strived for many years is to, especially with the veterinarians, and the veterinarians always blame it on the producers. I personally think the veterinarians are probably at fault. Getting a good, accurate history. Vaccination purchases, nutrition. Most of the time, my submission forms, you know, somewhere along the bottom is scribbled aborted calf. full workup. The quality of the submission is critical for diagnostic success. As producers, these are not incidental charges that you're going to be occurring or incurring to get a diagnostic workup. You owe it to yourselves, your veterinarians owe it to you to maximize the value of the information that I'm going to provide for you. You know, garbage in, garbage out. Oftentimes, you know, I feel sorry because a lot of times the material that I process probably should have been just dumped in the can, because I'm going to spend the money, and the odds of finding any useful information for the producer is limited. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of these issues. What's a good submission for what I do? Obviously, you're going to be presented, the producer's presented with a fetus on the ground. About 90% of the time, that's about all I'll get is the fetus. The second point there on that first line is the placenta. I would argue that the placenta is probably more valuable than the fetus itself. Many years ago, I've told the small ruminant folks that if they don't have a placenta, don't bother submitting. I'm not quite there with the cattle guys, but I'm almost there because these charges are getting high enough. And if, in all good faith, the producer has searched, you know, most of the time that placenta is hanging out of the back of the cow. And, you know, amazingly, they admit that to me. And then they feel kind of bad when I told them that they left the answer, you know, dangling between her hocks. A lot of times if you're too far away from a lab, the calf will be submitted in pieces parts. That's fine. It does save on shipping. Virginia Tech, bless their hearts, sent me little bigger pieces. I'm all for saving money on shipping, but my God, it's got to be bigger than a pinhead for me to do something with. Lung, liver, kidney, spleen, heart, brain, stomach contents, placentas, serology. I'm not a real big fan of individual cow serology. A lot of times veterinarians will draw blood, they'll submit it to me, and I'll stare at the tube for a little while and try to decide if it's worth spending the money to run it on a single point serum sample. If I do serology on a herd investigation, I do serologic profiling. Answering questions, or trying to answer questions, is there a difference between the aborted cows and the cows that are carrying viable fetuses? We do still get a lot of ear notches. People like to cut notches out of stuff. You know, the reality is we'll run BVD diagnostics, but most of the time we've got lots of other tests that we throw at these fetuses for BVD diagnostics. South Dakota State for years has pioneered a complete diagnostic protocol for these. We run a battery of tests on every calf that's submitted. And so it's basically a standardized workup. We get, I think, some degree of consistency in that I do them all. People say I'm obsessed with placenta. In my line of work, it really is critical for me being able to help producers. It saddens me to hear the story when they bring me the calf in the back of a feed stack, and I ask, you know, did you able to find a placenta, and the cow's still running out on pasture with it. It does greatly reduce diagnostic success. For you producers in the crowd, next time you have an abortion, you know, you can give the calf a quick kick out of frustration, but go hunt for that placenta after you're done with getting over the calf. If I have a choice between the calf and the placenta, I'll take the placenta. non-infectious abortions, we all know all these causes of reproductive failure, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time dealing with them. Most of the time, you know, all I can do is, if I come up empty, we can start discussing some of these other non-infectious causes of abortion. The infectious causes of abortion, the veterinarians in the crowd are all familiar with this laundry list of bacteria, fungal agents, viruses, protozoa. You know, a lot of the historic big players in bovine abortion, we've developed fairly efficient vaccine control programs, IBR, BVD, and leptospirosis. The incidence of these are drastically reduced from historic times. In the old days of IBR, the lab used to have fetuses lined up across the floor in the postmortem room. What I'm going to focus here on our last few minutes is something that we've seen is an emerging problem in the upper northern plains. I think it's the result of, you know, good control programs for these common viruses that we vaccinate for. And what we're left with to challenge our cow herds are some of these opportunistic pathogens. One we've seen is basically an emerging, and I almost hesitate to call pathogen because it really, in the sense of the word, isn't, is a lot of these different bacillus species. These are common environmental flora. These are dirt buds. What we've seen in the last 10 years or 12 years is an association between culturing these different strains of dirt bugs from the stomach content, lung, and placenta of these aborted fetuses in late-term abortions, often and even in stillborn calves. And then we've sort of extended that out into, or to the stillborn, out into some of these weak-born calves. Here's where the placenta becomes critical, and that what we've noticed in the last many years is that the lesions that these bugs cause are often confined to the placenta, and they're actually very mild. They're very multifocal. These aren't fulminating diseases. This is a subtle hit and miss attack on the placenta. Sometimes you'll see a mild fetal pneumonia, but that's the exception. What we've identified over the years and what we've seen in management changes in the upper Northwest is the advent of the vertical mixer wagon, the tub grinders, the bale processors, all of these management techniques that have all of a sudden taken what once upon a time was a round bale fed in a bale ring, where that old cow, which she didn't want to eat, she threw out on the ground, to all of a sudden incorporating all that spoilage, all that stuff on the bottom is incorporated into a ration. Now, you can, you know, sometimes, you know, when we ask questions, you know, how do you process some of these feedstuffs? You know, you'll kind of have to ask a few questions to find out maybe what the perceived risk factors are. In our country, they feed cattle all winter out on corn stalks. They'll be processing bales and windrows on the ground. If we're covered up with snow and they move 5 feet over every time, it's really no issue. But in open winters and they're feeding that chopped hay or processed bale on the ground, those cows are going to, especially if you're even remotely approaching limit feeding, those cows will pick up a lot of dirt when they're cleaning up that hay. Drought hay. We've had years where our hay's been real short. The balers are running tight on the ground. Bale up a lot of corn stalks, droughty, dirty corn stalks. Anybody that sat there watching that stuff go through a tub grinder knows exactly how much dirt's in that feed. It was, you know, basically that when we started processing a lot of these TMR rations for these beef cows is when we started seeing these problems. Okay, we're going to try this. Any pathologists in the group? So I can pretty well get away with murder. Okay. As a disclaimer, when you do abortion diagnosis, a certain degree of rot, autolysis, goes with the trade. It does not hurt to have a creative imagination when you're a pathologist. Sometimes an imaginary lesion is almost as good as a real lesion. In this case, this is actually a real lesion. The tissue architecture of this placenta is really distorted. It's been rotten. These are actually remnants of placental villi that should have lots of epithelial cells on them. But what hasn't disappeared is this little focal area of inflammation. And it's real. It's right there. And it's amazing how focal it can be. I used to, look at one, maybe two sections of placenta and thought that was a representative section or sampling of the entire tissue. You all know how big a placenta is on an adult cow. We're talking a phenomenal amount of tissue. That's a 5-micron section, 5 microns. So somebody do me the math real quick. 5 microns out of something that's going to fit on a big serving tray is not a real good sample size. What we've noticed is if I start looking at 10 or 12 sections of placenta, it's amazing how often these little focal areas start showing up. Another wonderfully preserved section, but you can see this increased cellularity. That's one villi sticking out there. If these, this one's probably pretty normal here. There's not a lot of cellularity to it. What we've noticed is that these bugs, when we grow a bacillus or some of these other environmental bugs out of these calves, the damage, these aren't real fulminating pathogens. They just sit and peck at the placenta. They do a little damage here, a little damage there. If I look at 12 sections, I may only have lesions in half of them, or maybe a third of them. But the damage is real, and what we speculate is that as this damage occurs, as that placenta is compromised, the ability to oxygenate that fetus and provide nutrition for that fetus is also compromised. If you have significant damage early, we believe the outcome is probably going to be an abortion. If the damage is occurring slower and less placenta is affected, that calf may make it to term but be non-viable. And then as you can see, the next possible outcome is that the calf is not aborted. It makes it to term. The damage was present but not severe enough to incapacitate the calf, and you have a live calf, but you have a weak-born calf. What we've had to kind of evolve in the upper northern plains is a discussion on how to prevent and possibly treat some of these. The obvious solutions are avoid feeding on the ground, avoid feeding spoiled roughage. Oftentimes, both of these are extremely difficult. The way the feeding systems are set up in South Dakota, they do a lot of ground feeding. Feed bale processors, feed TMR wagons are almost on every beef operation anymore. They very seldom feed long-stem hay. None of you probably are like this, but some of the producers I've worked with, they just come and hammer on me, okay, doc, now what the hell can we do? And, fortunately, we've got a lot of pretty sharp veterinarians running around out in South Dakota, and some of them started asking questions about what these bugs are. And I said, well, they're just boring dirt bugs. We said, were they hard to kill? I said, no, you can look at them cross-eyed and kill them. And they said, well, what about feeding antibiotics? You know, we did the antibiotic sensitivity testing. These things are sensitive to everything. And so it's not a resistance problem. And so they started pulsing some of these in problem herds, pulsing feed grade tetracyclines, feed them for 5 days, maybe stay off for a couple of weeks, and then feed them for five more days. And they do this primarily just in late. They were doing it in problem herds, and then it's kind of evolved into a lot of, if I had problems last year, I'm going to do it this year anyway. And what the problem herds noticed was a transition in this continuum. They felt like their abortions went away, and that progression was switched out to live-born calves. It was kind of amazing how quickly some of these folks reported improvements. What we're thinking happens is that we're preserving placental function. These bugs aren't hard to kill. Just preserve placental function for another day, another week, another month, till that calf reaches viability. Nobody likes playing with weak-born calves, but I guarantee you, you like playing with the dead ones a lot less. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. We've had already a significant weather event in South Dakota this fall. And so, you know, a lot of these opportunists they need things to help them. You know, a compromised cow nutritionally or stress-related. It's going to be interesting to see where we go with this. The other thing I'm just going to mention, I'm going to probably stop right here because everybody wants to eat. We get a lot of calls, a lot of conversations about moldy feed. And moldy feed obviously is, you know, the problems associated with moldy feed are exacerbated by the same things these dirt bugs. You know, the TMR rations, the mixing it in all together. We get a lot of calls to test for mycotoxins. I think that we're doing a lot of these now. We've had some drought-stressed feeds last year, and so we did a lot last year too. Even probably worse problems in years when we're really wet. But the mycotoxins and the mycotic abortions are two different things. The mycotoxin itself is produced metabolically by the fungus itself. It's a toxin it produces. Most of the time when we're looking at mycotic abortion, it's actually an infection from the known fungal agent. You know, when you got feed that's white, you probably got some issues. Matter of fact, you got feed that's got any unusual color, you're probably growing a fungus of some flavor. These are the sections of the silage pile you need to kind of leave behind, or at least if you're gonna feed it to something that doesn't have a uterus. I normally suggest just throwing it away. What can I answer for questions? Yeah.
You had Neospora on your list.
Yeah.
Is that a significant issue? And if it is, what do you do about it?
You know, Neospora is one of those things that was rampant back in the early 90s. It kind of spread across the country. It was primarily a dairy issue. We've seen it cross into beef cows, especially beef cows that have a lot of the same management issues as dairy, which a lot of beef herds do anymore. There's a vaccine for it. Like most protozoa, they're incredibly difficult to produce a vaccine for. I guess I've never really seen compelling evidence that I would recommend it in a beef herd, unless you just absolutely know you've got a problem and you can't do anything else about it. Most Neospora problems are addressed by, you know, feed security issues. Keep the dog manure out of the feed stuffs, coyote manure. Usually there's pretty decent immunity. Boy, howdy, I'm about down to my last five words. Immunity to Neospora. While they can have subsequent abortions, it's usually not a problem. Neospora is a classic example of a stress-induced disease. You will not see clinical Neospora without some concomitant stressor. We've seen it with BVD herds. We've seen it with aflatoxin. We've seen it in dairy herds with tremendous feet and leg issues. Or when I was out of Washington State, those dairies had access to a phenomenal amount of different cafeteria commodities. You know, they'd be feeding pizza crust one week and, you know, Olympia beer. And, I mean, it really smelled good on some of these dairies, to be honest. But a variety of different feedstuffs that would create some nutritional stresses that could trigger off Neospora abortions. Any other questions?
What's your full workup cause?
We get cases from all over the country, and I assume it's because we're just so wonderful. The other possible explanation is we're rather cheap. Out of state, we raised it up a little bit, but I think we're still, for a full workup, it's only $75. And that's for everything.
Can dirt bugs exist in water? Is it only in actual dirt?
Can dirt bugs exist in water?
I mean, dirt and water kind of have one of those intimate relationships, so yeah, they can. You can actually, in water, pick up I mentioned bacillus. There's actually a few other bugs that kind of behave the same way. Some of the enteric organisms, they're just regular gut bacteria, can, you know, also be kind of involved in these same type of syndromes. And yeah, water's actually really good for transmitting a lot of abortion pathogens, Salmonella, Campylobacter. I have no idea. I'm going to confess that I actually raise sheep, but I'm done. You can't shoot me now. But the sheep are always, you know, why do they like that mucky, yucky water in the tractor ruts? I have no idea. But. Yes.
How much risk are we taking on when we're rolling out hay for a fall calf herd that would be eating hay in their early pregnancy month?
You move it around, and you've got pretty well established sod. You're going to get into the risks when the grass is short and the cows are going to sit there and start, you know, disturbing the sod, and they're down into the dirt. It's usually, you know, we like, you know, the guys that are feeding on the ground, you know, when, you know, we're normally snow covered from December through April. So it's, you know, as long as we're snow covered and they're feeding on the ground, it's not a real big deal as long as they, you know, move over 10 feet. You know, feeding on bare ground, there is some risk. And these guys out where we're at, when they're feeding on bare tilled ground, I mean, there's nothing holding that soil in place. So they go lick up that last little bit of whatever, you know, that bale processor spit out. You know, they're going to get a tongue full of dirt with every bite. You know, these aren't pathogens in the sense that, you know, gee, getting a little exposure is going to hurt them. We believe it's a kind of an overwhelming exposure, and that, say, maybe only 1% of the bacteria can wander into the bloodstream and find its way to the placenta. But I think we've got fair evidence that that may be enough to, you know, once a producer finds out that he can save a few calves by throwing a little bit of oreomycin at them, it's kind of taken on a life of its own. I didn't really anticipate that happening, but, you know, they felt like it was a pretty low impact thing to do, you know. And the problem herds have reported pretty good success. So, yeah.
The higher moisture hay that we wrap, you know, put it in the big long tube, grass and alfalfa or clover mix, you know, sometimes if that tube gets punched, you'll get this white growth. How much risk do we have there?
Well, I mean, you're you know, that's where you're going to get some of your mycotic abortion risks. You know, it depends on how you feed that. You know, if you're just rolling that out or letting them, you know, that old cow's got a fair good survivability to her. She says that doesn't look good. And, you know, she's not opposed to helping you spend extra money on feed costs by throwing that over her shoulder. So it's when you somehow or really limit feeding them or TMRing them. You know, you got a whole bunch of cows that have bunk and they're not stupid. They know they better get while the getting's good. And they get in there and so these, you know, that would be incorporated in a TMR. She's not going to be able to sort that out. I kind of didn't realize this until I'd gotten my own, you know, that was my vertical mixer wagon, but, you know, dang, we had a few bad years of hay, and you know some of that crap I threw in that wagon was fairly scary. You know, and what the amazing thing is, you throw it in, you know it's crap going in, and then amazingly that wagon turns it into something. Well, hell, that don't look like bad feed at all. and you know, you kind of almost sort of talk yourself into feeling good about it. Anything else?